Going to go right to the CBusHomeImprovement.com live line. It's where we find Dr. Mark Caleb Smith. Dr. Smith has been one of our trusted voices politically pretty much spring, summer, into fall. We're heading toward a presidential election. We wanted to have people on that, you know, give us a baseline, people that we can trust. It kind of makes sense. Pay attention to what's going on. And Dr. Smith is one of those people. It's fascinating, Doctor. You know, when you just look at, you know, the state of today, you know, what all's going on. I suppose when you look at Joe Biden and Donald Trump, people, you know, going to take their shots at both sides, you know, both reported, suspected, however you want to say it, to be womanizers, whether it's Donald Trump and, you know, the women that have alleged that, you know, he's done what he's done irresponsibly. All the video of Joe Biden, I think the word is creeping. He's a creeper. Right. On young women, especially, and those kinds of things. But when you get down to talking about, you know, the future of the country and what matters, Joe Biden right now in the lead in Florida, but kind of weak with Hispanics among registered voters. And when you look at the economy, lion's share of people in this country think Donald Trump will do a better job. So, you know, you kind of have to ask yourself, is it going to be you know, minorities that are going to make the decision this time around? Is it going to be, hey, it's the economy, stupid? You know, we're getting closer and closer, A, to the first debate, election day, mail-in voting, whatever you want to say. Is there a sense yet of what is the top one or two things that voters really care about in 2020?
Yeah, I think right now the sense is that the economy certainly matters, but it's kind of taken a backseat to other factors that are in our country. So I think the virus is still top of mind for a lot of people. It's not going away. It's a consistent issue for both parties and how they deal with it. Also, I think the unrest in the country, you know, since the George Floyd episode in Minneapolis, we really haven't seen a letdown. Now, granted, it isn't quite what it was at different parts of the summer, but with the Breonna Taylor activity yesterday, and then continued unrest in Louisville, this story doesn't seem to be going away either. And so I think those two things have shaped the campaign in a way that most of us certainly would not have predicted early in the spring. So what looked like a particular kind of election has just changed radically in the past 6 months.
Yeah, when you talk about the social unrest in the country, it seems to be, even that is just, it's perspective. You know, I've tried so hard since the Breonna Taylor case made the headlines to just understand, because I look at a lot of these cases where black people are shot by white officers. And to my eye, it never seems like the black person is cooperating on any level with what the police are trying to do. Breonna Taylor, and again, I'm not trying to disparage a woman who's recently been killed, but she did not really run with great people. You know, her ex-boyfriend, who, you know, off again, on again, off again, on again for 7 years, used the address at which she was shot right as his primary. Police had a warrant. It's widely said as a no knock, but we know, if you read anything, that it was changed before police got there. They knocked, they announced themselves by FBI investigation, yet in the national media, it's still portrayed like she was gunned down in cold blood and was this upstanding citizen. And I just, like, it's troubling to me because it's like people don't seem to want to read. People don't seem to want to be informed before they just go off and start protesting about stuff. And I feel like a lot of this stuff would be a lot calmer if we could just have a conversation about almost all these instances. Was there any kind of cooperation? And if there is cooperation, what might have the outcomes been?
Joel, it's always amazing to me how people are able to put aside inconvenient facts and put those aside and simply allow their own construction of reality to determine their thoughts and their opinions. We have very strong attitudes and preferences. And so we go into it with a disposition of either the police are wrong or the police are right. And then we take that disposition and we apply it to the situation. And we really disregard, most of us just simply disregard the reality of the situation, and we just feed it into our predispositions. And it leads to these kinds of outcomes. In many of these cases, you know, I'm reminded of the Trayvon Martin case. In many of these cases, the facts are difficult. They're hard. You know, they aren't necessarily always clear as to what precisely happens. And even when they are clear, there's judgment involved. People have to make decisions. And it's easy to criticize those decisions, whether it's a law enforcement person or person resisting or not following instructions. But those judgments in the heat of the moment, we like to jump on and evaluate with some level of certainty that just isn't there.
Yeah.
It just isn't there.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
When I look at it, there's just not much grace involved. You know, we're not giving people any kind of grace to try to understand why they did what they did.
I'm for all the people that say there needs to be conversation.
Right.
I'm against, personally, the people that say we got to rein in the cops. Clearly, to me, the issue is how black people interact with police and why they do that. Is it a cultural thing where they are taught that the police are always going to mistreat you? So in any instance where there is interaction with a police officer, you got to get away. And you might be risking your life, but what happens if you have the interaction is worse than that. Whatever that is, I don't know, because I've not had that conversation in any kind of responsible way. But whatever it is, the people in these instances refuse or are reluctant to interact in a subservient way with police. That is the issue in my mind.
I think there's truth to that. I think there is a cultural fear within the African American community of law enforcement officers, and one question is where does that fear come from?
Yeah,
you know, I don't know that answer very well. Like you said, I haven't been in that community enough to know the answer to that question. But for me, as someone who looks at structures and due process and things like that, I also want to make sure that when police officers misbehave, and it does happen,
sure
I think
does.
It's the small fraction of cases, but when they misbehave, that there are consequences. And the consequences need to be in spite of what their union wants, in spite of what other people might want. The consequences need to be clear, and they need to be, relatively speaking, swift.
And if you're talking like LeBron James from a perspective, you know, of leading in the black community and all that stuff, the conversation should also, in my opinion, be we got to get to a point
right.
where when the local news comes on, that the first five stories, which are always who got shot, where they got shot,
right.
and all that stuff, we
right. got to
get black people off of those stories. Because if you consume that kind of information, and a lot of people do, you start to have an attitude, because 95% of the time when you're looking at the local news and the bad stuff that went down in the last 24 hours, black people are involved. And I'm not saying something that's, you know, shocking. Just watch the local news. Look at the most wanted list and those things. And if that is systemic racism, then that's what we got to get after. That's what we have to discuss. Who puts out, who makes the decision on what makes the news? Who puts out the top 10 list and all that? And if we need to change that, like Hollywood's changed how they're doing the Oscars, then we need to get after it. But I don't hear anybody driving conversation that way.
Well, part of the problem, Joel, I mean, you're a media guy, right? Part of the problem is what do we consume and what gets ratings?
Yeah.
What gets clicks,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
What gets rating and what gets clicks are the things that are sensational, that are violent, that are controversial, that are divisive. And those things lead because those things generate the most eyeballs. And so, I mean, I'm with you. I think media ought to be responsible, but media are responsible for what gets ratings. And we feed the beast. We, the people, feed that beast by saying this is what we want to hear and this is what we want to see.
Yeah.
And so I'm sympathetic. But at the end of the day, to me, we the people are part of the problem here.
No doubt. Don't you think, to bring it back around to political presidential politics, don't you think if Joe Biden or Donald Trump would just get real with the American people and say these kinds of things and say, I want to lead the conversation, I'm going to bring police detectives and chiefs and all these people together, and we're going to figure it out. And if one group of people really is the bad group, we're going to stay on them. And if that is not the case, then we're going to stop doing that, and we're going to figure it out, and we're going to communicate to these different factions of how we're doing it, how we're going to do it better, and why you got to cooperate with the police. Whatever you've been told is not right. Police are going to give you a break until they figure out the answer. If you could have one of the two national candidates say something like that, I think they win in a landslide.
I agree. But that to say that would pull against their constituencies, right? So if Donald Trump says that, then he's risking violating his connection right now with the law enforcement community. If Joe Biden says that, he's going to risk his connection right now with the minority community. And so there's risk involved with that sort of thing. But I think the risk would be worth it because the benefit would far outweigh whatever kind of risk you have when you make those kinds of comments. What you're talking about is leadership.
Yeah.
You're talking about someone saying, what's the problem? Let's solve the problem. Let's not worry about these other factors quite so much. And Joel, the biggest problem I have right now in American government is we don't see that kind of leadership.
Yeah, there's almost no leader. I mean, Mayor Andrew Ginther here in Columbus is upset at the findings of the Breonna Taylor case. I'm not sure what he knows. I don't know. Maybe he's living and breathing and exhaling information about that story 24/7. But really what it comes down to is it's just more of the same from him. I guarantee he doesn't know all of the ins and outs of that case. And it just becomes, another politician just espousing their thing to try to be in good with their constituents. And it's like, pay attention. Breonna Taylor did not hang out with particularly great people. And, she is billed as a first responder, hasn't worked in that way for several years. All these facts about no-knock warrants, which isn't true, and she was shot in bed, which isn't true, and, they shot first, so the police fired back. I mean, there's all this stuff, and people just want to gloss right by all that stuff. And when you see someone that's in charge of the 15th biggest city in the country saying, well, I don't like that, wow. It's a real head-scratcher for me.
I'm right there with you, and frankly, we need better leaders, just across the board.
So when you look at that, do you think the first debate, any of the debates, going to shed light on whether Joe Biden or Donald Trump is a better leader?
I hope so, but I don't know if the debates are the right way to do it. We like to think they are, but that's just rhetoric. That's just responding well to questions. What we really need to see is people who are willing to take these kinds of risks and solve problems. And honestly, I'm not sure either one of these candidates have a long record of that. Candidly.
Yeah, well, I mean, Joe Biden's got a long record. Donald Trump's record's not so long, but I mean, he made campaign promises, which, got him into the office. By my eye, most of what he said he was going to do, he's done. I mean, he hasn't drained the swamp, per se.
Right.
But I mean, you're talking peace in the Middle East. You're talking an economy, although rocked by the pandemic, was booming. You've got new trade agreements in North America and with China, seems to have upper hand. I mean, good grief, what's the guy got to do?
I don't disagree with any of that, Joel, but is he the kind of guy that's going to bring people into a room and solve those kinds of problems?
Yeah, that's a great question.
That's the question that I have. I mean, I think he could do it.
Yeah, he could.
But does he want to do it?
Yeah, he is great at brokering deals and getting people to get real with where they are. I wish he would. I mean, this is garnering so much media attention and so much just conversation, whether it's family, water cooler, how you want to typify it, and people get so worked up about it. I'm with you. I wish there was a leader that would say, look, we got to get real. It's no more posturing. It's no more, hey, I'm LeBron James. Hey, I'm Mayor Ginther. Hey, I'm whoever. And I'm just talking to my people, so I still have a great relationship with them. We got to get real about where we're at and figure it out, or it's never, ever going to change.
I agree. We have to do a better job having those conversations and actually trying to solve some of these problems and not just talking about it.